This episode of the Loyal Sun Show is brought to you by Rendine Consulting. If you've listened to us for any amount of time, you know all about Rendine Consulting's commitment to the Pitt Athletics program and brand, and how much they've meant to the Loyal Suns. That's Rendine Consulting, providing investment managers assistance with technology integration. Visit www.rendineconsulting.com for more information. That's www.rendineconsulting.com. Hello and welcome back to the Loyal Sun Show. That's at the Loyal Suns on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here for Pitt Sports content you won't want to miss. If you love the first signs of football season and hate West Virginia.
That it?
We're locking in, baby. It's August. This is the place for you. The Loyal Sun Show. A safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt Athletics fix. Brought to you by Pittsburgh Sports Now.
Who saw that coming?
That's right. As of today being Monday, I guess this is coming out on Wednesday, but today, while we're talking, it's Monday, August 1st. We have signed a deal with Pittsburgh Sports Now for them to host our show for the 2022 season. As always, I am joined by my co-hosts, Squid and Dylan. Guys, how are we feeling about this situation we found ourselves in? Just three dickhead buddies talking into a microphone, and now someone's giving us money for it.
Never thought it would happen. Didn't think we'd release our first episode when we tried recording, and it was terrible.
You mean our third episode?
Well, no, I knew we weren't releasing the first one. The third one I had some hope for, and we did end up releasing it.
What about the second one?
No, that one sucked, too.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad I came to this, but appreciate Pittsburgh Sports Now for the opportunity. Hopefully reach a few more ears, help us build the Pitt brand, and get us some new equipment, because right now our microphone is just chilling in a glass.
It's a Pitt glass.
It's a
Pitt pine glass, so it could be, there are worse surfaces, you know?
Yeah. So next episode we'll have some better audio for everyone. Right now you deal with the Amazon Basics mic for one last ride.
One more. But if you are watching this episode on the YouTubes right now, it is because we were able to do some level of upgrades. We're up in our game a little bit this year.
You can see our faces, which is
Look,
good or bad.
Yeah. Squid, look. Say hi to our friends.
Squid's just still a creep on.
Okay. So, so what can our listeners expect now that we are partnered with the fine people at Pittsburgh Sports Now?
Same exact show.
Same exact shit.
Just in a kitchen.
Yeah. Or a living room. The Rendine Consulting Studio, because Greg's not going anywhere. We're broadcasting live from the Greg, a.k.a. my kitchen.
Yeah. Or your couch over there. Once the new microphones are ready to go, we'll see. Like on a field trip.
But yeah, so we were able to enter into this deal. It's spanning this season. Essentially, we will be handing over the rights to broadcasting our podcast to Pittsburgh Sports Now, and in turn they're going to offer us the support we need to not have to record with Amazon Basics microphones, to, you know, be able to focus our efforts in other places outside of, you know, trying to push this rock up a hill, so we can put more focus on merchandising, social media, and hosting fine outings for NIL opportunities for Pitt players, like the golf outing this past weekend.
Couldn't have gone better. A lot of fun. I mean, Pitt, golf, beer, what more can a guy ask for?
Yeah.
I can't think of a fourth thing I would ever ask for. No.
Nothing. Before we get right to the golf outing, I did want to say, I had someone text me today and ask, like, oh, I hope this doesn't change their style or anything, but I do want to reiterate that this is going to be the same show. We're just going to make it better. But you don't have to worry about us starting to censor ourselves or anything.
We did sell out. I want to be very clear about that. We sold out not, like, to the first bidder. But that doesn't mean that, like, we're sellouts, you know? Like, we're still going to, like, we say f*** in the next interview, like, 12 times in our conversation with Elijah.
Exactly.
So you're still going to get the same irreverent, stupid opinions from us that you will. It's just going to be on a 4K camera and spoken through a mic that costs like $100. Exactly. Three mics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so if there's any concern there, don't worry about it. Now we can talk about the golf outing. I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Absolutely. So, in case you missed it, about 14 pit players, a couple dozen fans, we went out and we converged on Quicksilver Golf Course in, where were we?
Harmony.
Harmony, PA?
Midway, something like that. Wherever Quicksilver is.
Yeah, wherever Quicksilver Golf Course was, and we had a great time. We have a lot of content coming out for you guys, and it was really an incredible opportunity for Panther faithful to get to meet some of their favorite Panthers and the young men that represent the University of Pittsburgh, and I must say, I came away very impressed.
We got to play with Gavin Bartholomew in our foresome. Every bit of 6'5", 250 pounds.
Massive. He walked over to us, and first of all, he was towering over Ryan Jacoby, who is large. And the first thing I thought when I saw Bart was, how tall was Kroll?
Yeah.
Because Kroll had looked like he had a head on him, and 30 pounds.
Yeah. Just massive human beings. John Morgan is huge. Deion Hayes, bigger than I expected. All those guys are impressive, to say the least. But also impressive just as individuals. All those guys, the way they interacted with each other, and the way they interacted with fans who paid money to come golf with them and just kind of hang out with them. To be fair, they were getting a payday out of it, you know,
yeah.
the NIL stuff. But no, they're really, really good guys. John Morgan just commands a room.
Oh, he's the best. Really the best.
Walks in the trap.
Yeah,
we're the trap.
You're going to be hearing a lot more from the Trap Walker this year. We're working on some stuff we're not ready to announce yet, but we're very excited about. You know, and he's going to be very involved with the Loyal Sons, but he's just impressive, and you can tell on and off the field a true leader of that group of young people.
Yeah, they're all just great personalities, down to earth. They're happy to chat with everybody there, young, old, because they're Pitt fans and they're Pitt guys too. So the Q&A, I don't know where we posted some of that, but some really funny and honest answers that you don't know what to expect with college athletes. I mean, they're college kids. They're kind of famous in a way. It's a weird...
weird dynamic.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic. But they were all amazing dudes and happy to be there, as were we.
Yeah, for the Q&A portion, we had Keaton Slovis, Nick Patty, Deion Hayes, Izzy Abanacanda, and John Morgan answering questions. And I wanted to highlight a couple just for the people who didn't get to make it out. I think probably the most serious and revealing answer was, you know, someone had asked about what did they think the turning point of the season was last year.
It wasn't even the turning point, it was the signature moment.
Right.
So it could have been a good thing. It could have been like quenching the Coastal,
right?
Virginia game.
Yeah. The ACC run. So the answer was the loss to Western Michigan. Keep going.
Yeah, they were real serious. I think Nick Patty and John Morgan both looked at each other like, yeah, that was it. And you could tell, like, they were having fun. They were joking about the national championship, things like that. But deep down, they were like, we were taking care of business this year, and we don't give two craps about who gets away because they're getting steamrolled.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine that was difficult for them to talk about in a room full of Panther fans because, I mean, we all remember how we felt.
Well, that's a thing too. That's a thing too. You worry as fans because you don't know what it's like when how do you handle success? Are they gonna think they're all that? But there's no sense of that at all.
No, this is truly a team that has its sights on the college football playoff and beyond, which is cool, because it didn't feel delusional. It felt like a group of guys who were very aware of their own abilities and their own weaknesses, and you know where the ceiling is for them.
But John Morgan even broke us down on a 1-2-3 national champs, so yeah. Got me going.
Chills.
Didn't keep me from topping my first drive off the tee box, but
same. But let's talk about the golf a little bit. The quality of golf, for I think most of the attendees, not great. Nick Paddy, incredible golfer. Bill Stull, another guest, great golfer. The rest, not phenomenal. I would say Gavin outplayed us for the most part. We did not have our best day as the Loyal Sons.
Yeah, Gavin, he took a little bit to get going, but whenever it mattered most, he was by far the best golfer there. He had the closest to the pin on a par 3, literally 3 feet. He made the longest putt. So I think that bodes well. I think we'll transfer to the football field. When the lights are the brightest, he'll show up. I think those are mutually exclusive. Yeah. Football and golf.
Yes, the exact same thing. Actually, I will say I was very happy to hear that Ben Sauls played well, because given how mental of a game that is, and how, like, if you get mad at yourself even a little bit, like, you go into the tank, to know that our kicker just has, like, a steel trap up there and there's no shaking him, that made me feel quite good.
He still has to steal the job back from Sam Scarton, but that's neither here nor there.
Hey, if you know, if the occasion demands it, I know that he's going to have good brain.
Take him out to a par 3. Whoever scores better, that's who Deuce goes with.
It'd be a fun way to decide a position battle.
But yeah, everyone else swung and missed a few times.
Everybody else had fun.
They had fun. They made some putts. Everyone walked away happy.
Kamara banged a pretty long one, despite apparently never holding a golf club before in his life.
He had fun, though.
We all had fun. We all had fun. And we're all looking forward to it next year. And if you know, the 412 Alliance kind of takes it over from Rendine Consulting, they are going to either have to invite us to host it or deal with us camping out at the golf course, because that was way too much fun for us to not get in on next year.
I will not be missing that.
No, absolutely not.
I will be there next year.
I might not be like actually swinging a golf club, but I will be riding around, you know, on a golf cart with our photography team at the very least.
Well, I think Elijah Zeiss is walking through the front door now, so we'll get to our conversation with him.
Yeah, as if I didn't already say that we recorded the interview already.
You said that?
Yes, I did.
You didn't have to say that.
It's pitch black outside. Video.
Yeah, they can see us.
Cool. Run it back. However,
I kind of wanted to leave that in and go for it.
However you want to transition it. No, let's just leave it like that.
Yeah. Before we get to our next segment, we wanted to take a moment to let our faithful listenership know that the Loyal Sun Show is currently in the market for additional sponsors for the 2022 season. If you or someone you know would be interested in having us promote your goods and or services to Panther Nation via this show and our social platforms, please reach out to us at loyalsonsemail@gmail.com. You can also DM us at The Loyal Sons on Twitter and Instagram. We are happy to provide data on our listenership, engagement, and impressions upon request. All ad revenue will go toward enhancing the quality of our show, increasing our efforts to promote the Pitt brand, and probably beer. Please welcome back to the show our co-host this week, former Pitt outside linebacker, Elijah Zeiss. Elijah, how you doing today?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Here in the Loyal Sun studio, the Rendine Consulting studio, a.k.a. The Greg.
Yeah, I mean, this place is awesome.
Thank you. It's also my kitchen.
Yeah.
So, camp started. It's Monday. Yesterday was Sunday. Camp started yesterday. Why don't you take us through a little bit what life has looked like for the last 24 hours for the young men in Royal and Yellow?
Yeah, so Sundays, it's usually report day. And what will happen is all the guys will show up. You've probably seen like the live wire videos of the guys rolling up the camp and, you know, getting pretty excited.
You ever rock any hard fits on the way out?
No. Yeah, no.
Probably just rolled out of bed.
Yeah. I'm usually just wearing sweatpants or something. But the guys will roll up. They'll have a bunch of meetings. They'll usually have dinner. There's a lot of like compliance stuff they got to go through. All the ground rules to get laid, and then they usually, I'm not sure if they've done it in the last couple years, but they usually do like some sort of like team gathering type event at the end, and it's usually when you see the pictures of them in like their work shirts with like the saying or like quote of the year.
Like lock the gates.
Lock the gates. Yeah. The pursuit, stuff like that. They'll usually have those work shirts on for a picture. I think the 2 or 3 years we were on the Gateway Clipper on that Sunday night. And so that's usually what it is the first day. And then, you know, Monday you get right into it. And we obviously saw the clip from day one today. So it's exciting.
Were you a guy who was nervous, or were you excited the night before?
I think before my first one, I was definitely nervous. And then once you like get past your first one, it's usually kind of just like you're excited, but it's also like kind of a hassle. Like once you get to like a certain level, you're like, yeah, like this camp's like kind of over this. But you know, you're ready to get back into it, and take some weeks to get better. Get things going and just get into the season.
It has to be a grind too, because we were talking to some of the guys at the golf outing. I know Bart in particular was saying, you know, that first Monday.
Bart being our good friend Gavin Bartholomew, for
right.
Those of the uninitiated who are not best friends with him now.
Correct. Fourth member of our foursome. Went 2 over. Not a great showing by us, but either way, great day. Anyway, he was saying to us on that Monday, he'd probably, you know, they'll show up 7:30 and won't get back to bed around 10 at night. Does that sound about right?
That's usually how it goes. You wake up the crack of dawn, you'll get some breakfast, you'll have meetings, then you'll be right out on the field. You'll practice for two and a half hours, and then it used to be we would have a practice, a second practice in the day, every other day, but they've since gone away from that. So you pretty much just have a practice, one practice every day, and then you'll have like a lift or a walkthrough in the afternoon. But usually what happens is right after practice, they have two different lift groups. One group will lift, the other guys will shower, eat lunch, and then everyone will just be like passed out in the locker room on the floor. Like there aren't enough towels to like shower with, because everyone just grabs towels and is like using them as blankets and stuff on the ground. Like you'll walk in there probably at like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, the lights will be completely out and there will just be bodies all littered across the ground, just like passed out. And then around 4 or 5, that's when we'll have like another lift, or a walkthrough, and then more meetings. And then usually we'll have like a big like team meeting at the end, and then that's when the guys will have like a snack or something, and then they'll be released back to the hotel. So it's a very long day. It's usually, you're usually getting back by like 10 o'clock.
How competitive is it like early on? Are guys going at it trying to beat each other up, or is it more build up going through the motions? Are there fights super often?
It's usually pretty competitive in the beginning. Like in the beginning, everyone's like real juiced up about being in a camp. Once like that first day of pads comes, like everyone's getting after it. It's definitely very competitive, but then as you go through camp, and like the days start to like stack together and like really starts to become a grind, it's still competitive, but it's a lot more like It's a lot more chippy, I guess I would say, because guys, you're kind of just getting tired of each other and getting tired
just taking shots at each other.
Yeah, and then once you get sort of towards the end of camp, you know, guys like start to get a more of a perk in their step because they're, you know, getting towards the end, you're getting closer to the season, and so the competitiveness tends to pick back up towards the end, especially with like position battles and stuff like that starting to like really solidify towards that time. So
what's the best camp fight you saw, or one that you'd be willing to talk about?
Well, we've talked about this one before. It was the this one wasn't a fight. This was the Todd Thomas Todd Thomas and George Aston thing. Obviously, like I said, Todd Thomas was the big bad dude. He was like, I don't know, he was probably an eighth year senior at this point. And George Aston was a walk on, and he was real big, like had a rep in the weight room already. And so they did like a like Oklahoma or a drill, had him like get in into the middle, and he called out Todd Thomas. Todd Thomas got in the
was
middle with him.
Provoked? Like the George was like, I want Todd Thomas. That's what like, older guys like.
Call him. Yeah. He like got in. The older guys were like kind of egging him on. He's like, yeah, I want him. So they got in and George like lifted Todd. Like pushed him back. He was embarrassed. Like it was bad. I'm trying to think. There was a fight between I want to say it was Brandon Ford, or yeah, I want to say it was between him and maybe like Sean Idowu, one day where I think it was Brandon was like swinging his helmet at him,
like Myles Garrett.
yeah, like it was pretty bad, and like everyone was like running. This is like probably our last year there. I can't remember what provoked it, but that was pretty funny.
Did you ever stir the pot? You ever get into it with anybody?
No. That's not really, yeah. But there's always like...
Never to clean anybody up?
No. Yeah, I'm like usually the one that's like just kind of like pretty tired at that point. I just don't have the energy to like get into the fight. It's always like funny just like kind of being back and like watching it unfold too. Yeah, there was a bunch of more Todd Thomas. There was a bunch of Todd Thomas got into a almost. It was like pretty bad. It was during a walkthrough before practice where we were scout team, and we are like running offense just off of cards, and we're literally just walking through it so the defense could get a look. And at the time, it was Scott McKillop who was like the GA who was in charge of like setting up the play so we could run it.
Right.
And Todd Thomas was like a I think they called it an underwear All-American. He would always like anytime we would be like in walkthroughs, like he would be going full speed, like messing up the play. And the one time Scott had just like gotten fed up with it and like started like saying sarcastically, like, you're real tough. Like you're definitely, you know, you definitely get this right on the field, like when it's live, and Todd just like we told him to shut up, called him a bitch, like it was just like all this face, and like we're like trying to run a play, like, and they're actively like yelling at each other like across the field. So the play just kind of stops, and they kind of got into each other's faces, and we're kind of just like looking around, like what? So there's like just stuff like that happens every day. It's ridiculous. I think I've sent you the video of Connor Dentino was like he would always like hold guys like way after the whistles were blown, and there's like several occasions on film where guys are like the whistle will blow and Connor's still holding them, and you just see guys like slugging them in the helmet. It's so funny. Quentin McGinnis got a bunch of like good shots. It's like just stuff like that all the time. It's so funny.
Was it standard issue, like, guys sucker-punching a football helmet?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
How bad did that hurt? I know you said you weren't really, like, a fighter, but, like...
I mean, I can't imagine it felt very good. I got my hand jammed in between two helmets on a play once, and, like, I was, like... it hurt for like 3 weeks. I was like I had to like have my finger like drained. Like they had to stick a needle in because there was like a blood blister underneath. And I'm telling you, like I would like get lightheaded during practice. That's how bad it hurts. I couldn't imagine like just wanting to punch somebody, out, you know. So
you mentioned there's a hotel that all the players stay at. They aren't, you know, going back to their apartments in Oakland. What kind of, like, regular day-to-day amenities and niceties that we, you know, are afforded do you have to give up at camp that, you know, people wouldn't expect? Like, I imagine there's no boozing, no women, nothing like that. But what things did you miss the most during camp from, you know, the real world?
Besides boozing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is.
I'll drink to that, brother.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you're pretty much just cut off from everything. It's literally just football 24/7. Like, you're really not in your hotel room all that much. You wake up, you pretty much just sleep there, and you wake up in the morning, go to the facility, you're there until you get back at like 10. And if you're awake, you're probably just watching like a minuscule amount of TV while you're, you know, reviewing your plays and like the install for the next day. So literally anything that's not football is what you're missing out on. And so definitely like when you're looking at your phone and like seeing, you know, people out on vacation and stuff like that, seeing, you know, you guys,
I'm sure that feels
you guys
pretty
getting
good
after it, like at like Peter's or, you know, stuff like that. Like it definitely is like a FOMO type deal. And it's weird, like my first summer not being in camp, I like really had to like step back and think about it. Like since high school, like the first like August has just never really been a month that's like really been open to me, you know.
You've only
like
had 11 months
yeah,
in a
exactly
year for most of your life.
It's like wild to think about, like you're pretty much just cut off for that whole month. So
when you get that half hour or so of TV time in the hotel, what are you firing up? Is it an Entourage, Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, it's Entourage, yeah. I'll usually get through Entourage twice during the during the course of camp. Like it's kind of just like a routine thing for me at this point. But
what's the Entourage count at? How many times have you watched it at this point?
In between 35 and like 40. Jesus. I like literally just finished watching it a couple weeks ago.
Favorite Entourage character?
I gotta say Johnny Drama. He that dude like cracks me up. The things that he says are just unbelievable. I won't go into it, you know, for the sake of being appropriate, but
yeah, we don't know how long of a leash we're gonna get from PSN, but
yeah.
Favorite Vincent Chase girlfriend?
Sasha Gray.
The chick from the
the careful.
The chick from like the episode with Bob Saget. She's R-A. The one that the madam of like the whorehouse. She's hot.
Alright, back to camp.
So what do the coaches do to get you going? I know right now we hear reports that they're playing Country Roads to get the boys juiced up for the backyard brawl. Did they ever do any mind games or any crazy tactics?
Their doozy
like,
seems like
sergeant tactics to get you fired up for the day.
Deuce seems like a real like he loves that kind of coach speak, like motivational
we'll
shit.
He'll press the right buttons to get you going.
Yeah. I can't say that I really remember anything.
Well, here's what I was getting at. I know back
when
your days. Back in your day, that's so long ago, they had a Dog Soldier of the Day award that you won.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is, like, that lasted maybe, like, 3 weeks.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah, I never really heard about it ever after that.
Well, we still talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
But what was that? You had, like, a big chain, or what would you get if you're Dog Soldier of the Day? Like a
you got a tweet on Twitter. Is pretty much,
oh, okay.
That's pretty much what you got. But, yeah, I mean, they do, like, things in the team meeting before practice, like show like videos, or like the video team will edit together some like funny video or something like that to like kind of get guys going. there's all kinds of like different gimmicks like all through camp. Like it gets pretty long. They'll have like different food trucks or like ice cream or something that like comes through at the end of practice, so guys can grab like grab stuff on the way out. Like there's all kinds of like little treats and stuff like that like through camp. So
they feed you pretty good at camp. I imagine your caloric intake has to be pretty high.
Oh yeah. I mean it's unbelievable the food that they have there. Because the guy who cooks all the food for us is the chef for the Steelers. So we get a ton of just awesome food. Like I'm talking shrimp, lobster, steak, really good like creamy like garlic chicken, like all kinds of just different stuff. They will bring in, like I said, they bring in food trucks. There's a barbecue place that they bring in like ribs and cornbread and mac and cheese and stuff like they feed us really well there. And we have like 3 or 4 meals a day. So it's, and then I mentioned before, right before you go back to the hotel, they usually have a snack, and the snack is usually something that's a lot less regulated, I guess would be the word to say. Like that's when they're like bringing in like treats, like food from like, if there were like fast food, they would bring in like that, pizza, different types of like ice cream sundaes, all kinds of like stuff like that for the treats at the end of the day. So it's,
so even like the ribs and steak and creamy chicken before that, they're like regulating, okay, they should be getting this much fat, this much protein.
Yeah. I don't know if they still have one, but when I was there, they had a nutritionist who was very strict, and so she was on top of like making sure that everything we had like met, like checked off a box, I guess, essentially. And she was pretty good at it. I mean, she was able to accommodate a lot of different foods that were like really good without it, like they were healthy without it, like, you know, tasting like shit, you know what I mean?
Well, you moved from receiver to linebacker. Did they make you gain like an absurd amount of weight? I don't think they're with linebacker or linemen. They make them wake up in the middle of the night and scarf down like 3 PB&Js.
I never really had to do any of that. When I got moved, I was probably around 215, 220. And I felt pretty good at that weight. And then as it happened, I sprained my ankle. And so just not being able to like really walk around and like run for a couple of months, like just naturally gained about 10-15 pounds. And so my last two seasons I was more around 240-245-ish, and so it kind of just came naturally, but I didn't really have to do anything.
Like, no. You got fat on your own?
Yeah.
Like no drums or Cheez-Its or anything like that?
A hammock of yeah, stuff like that.
A desk full of cake.
Yeah.
No, that sucks. You got the opportunity that I think every man, woman, and child wants in their life, which is, hey, go gain 30 pounds, doesn't matter how you do it. Just pack on as much weight as you can. But you didn't get to do it in, like, a fun way. You just kind of had to sit around a little bit because you were hurting.
I was literally just a fat fuck, you know what I mean? Like,
You can swear.
I was a fat fuck.
Nice.
Yeah. I just, like, it's funny, I don't have my license, that license anymore, but the license, I got my license renewed during that time, and I took a picture, and, like, my face is, like, kind of fat, and then my neck is, like, huge. It is, like, hilarious. Megan's, like, always laughs at that picture. Like, I'm telling you, my neck was, like, out to here. Now I'm just, like, kind of a pencil neck.
I'm going to need that picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try and find it, yeah.
Here's DK Metcalf back in the day.
Yeah.
You and George Aston, they couldn't find neck rolls big enough for.
Yeah, literally. George, I'll tell you, that dude was just something. They couldn't find, like, just normal shirts big enough for that dude. Because his muscles are just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, a favorite of ours, given our age and just the number of stories. And you always seem to deliver with, like, a George Aston tale.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
me and George are pretty close. He was a funny dude. He liked to get after it on the weekends as well, so that's why we were so close. I saw him like literally bend an iPhone and just like break it, like snap it in half. Like,
why?
I mean, we were just, you know, we were tuned up. That's really the only
we don't question George Aston around here.
No, never.
Did you ever have to go head to head with him, like Oklahoma drill or anything like that?
Yeah.
Is he like the number one? I was wondering if there was any guys where you're just like, you've been at camp for a week and a half, you look over the other side and you're like, I would rather not go head up with this dude. Was he number one on that list?
Who else? Yeah, I mean, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and it was like, a lot of guys like, you'll have a rapport with them, so like, you know, like, we'll just make sure that neither of us makes each other look bad on film. Like, we'll go hard, but we're not, you know, going that hard. George, it was like, never that way. You like, had to like, tighten your chin strap a little bit, like, I know it's coming. You just had to like, kind of run, you kind of just had to take it in the mouth.
Now, who was number two? Because I feel like George Aston's up here by himself.
That's a gimme.
And then, who was like, number two of guy, you're like, oh man, this guy might just clean me up. Or was there a specific moment that you did get cleaned up real bad in practice by somebody?
Oh, no, there definitely was, yeah. whenever Darren Hall was in the backfield and he would run, we wouldn't usually bring people to the ground. You just thud them up. And it's, like, very hard to, like, keep a thud up, like, keep wrapped up. Like, if the guy just keeps running. So, there's kind of like an unspoken rule that when the linebacker or the defender, like, you know, wraps you up, okay, you kind of just stop him and the play is over. Darren Hall would, like, run just full speed. And, like, you're kind of supposed to help each other out. Like, the way that they teach it is you're supposed to, like, the running back isn't really supposed to, like, kind of, you know, get down and, like, try and run you over. But Darren Hall would kind of like always do that. And there was one time he caught like a, it was either an outside zone or he caught like a bubble out in the flat. And I went up to like try and thud him. And he kind of just ran right through me. I like went to like kind of just get him. And his head like kind of just went like straight up into my neck. And I kind of just like flew to the ground. It like looks horrible.
So when dudes do that kind of shit, like, do you get pissed off at him? Like, hey, man, you broke the unspoken rule. Is it an understanding of this guy is also fighting for a spot on the field?
Yeah, it's like one of those things you can't really, like, you could be pissed off about it to yourself, but, like, unless it's, like, egregious, you're not really going to say anything about it. It's kind of, you know, when you're in film watching it and the coach is, like, kind of shitting on you, you kind of just have to take it on the mouth, and then that's that. So
kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Just like, next time I see you in the flat, I'm like, yeah, you.
Exactly.
Let's go for his knees.
So, given, you know, your past experience with Pat Narduzzi's camps, as well as, you know, you watched a lot of Pitt football last year, do you have any particular thoughts going into this season or storylines that you specifically are interested in, given, you know, those personalities and what you know about the program?
I mean, I think the obvious, I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how the QB situation unfolds. I definitely think that that'll be something that I can imagine Coach Narduzzi will keep close to the chest until, like, the week of the game, unless one of the guys is doing, like, obviously better throughout camp. I think, honestly, that's how a lot of things are going to, like, with most of the different positions and stuff. A lot of it's going to be close to the chest. You're not really going to know too much until, like, maybe the Thursday. Well, I guess the game's on Thursday, so the Tuesday of that week. Like, even when I got moved to linebacker that first camp, I didn't even know I was starting until the Thursday before the game.
Really?
And yeah, it was a pretty cool feeling, honestly. I like wasn't expecting it.
What'd it feel like leading up to that? I imagine you were stressing out for a full month over it.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like, agonizing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Because, like, when you think about it in the long term, like, the first day, thinking about the rest of camp and where you want to be at the end of camp, like, it's kind of, like you said, it's stressful, it's kind of overwhelming, but once you like kind of get into the groove of camp, it's kind of just like a day by day type of mentality. Like some days you have good days, some days you have bad days. Like by the end of camp, you kind of look back and see like your full body of work. And it's definitely less stressful than it seems when you first start, because it's kind of just like, well, you know, each day is, you're not defined by one day, you know what I mean? You just keep kind of working, and I think that's the best kind of advice I guess I can give to any of the guys right now is, you know, you kind of just have to, whatever happens one day, you just got to move on to the next day, because the day is just, you got to string days together and keep going. And you know, Coach Narduzzi's thing during camp is you just get 3% better every day. And then by the end of it, you're obviously a lot percent better. So
it's good math.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do some quick math there. It's what, like 75% better?
Is camp 25 days?
How long is camp?
I mean, feels like forever, honestly. I think it's usually whatever the start date was yesterday until the week before game week. So whatever that is.
This is too much math. So how how did you find out that you were starting? Was it when, you know, Chris Peak tweeted out like the two deep, or did Narduzzi call you into the office and, you know, let you know?
I don't remember. I think Harley told me. I think he might have called me. Or maybe I met him in like the defensive line linebacker room. I can't remember exactly. I'm pretty sure Harley told me though, and it was like after one of the practices. And I literally was kind of just like, yeah, all right. And then I just kind of went home and prepared for it. And I just remember like kind of being so like caught off guard, like that I didn't even tell my parents that I was. So like. That first game was obviously the game where I sprained my ankle and was out for the rest of the season. It was like 9 plays in, but when I like met my parents at the in the locker room after it happened, they're like, "We didn't even know you were starting. Like, we would have gotten here a little bit earlier."
So they missed your 9 plays.
No, they saw it. They just I think they kind of were shuffling into their seats like right around yeah. So.
So, aside, do you know anything about, like, the guys that are going out for the outside linebacker positions this year?
Not really, but I was taking a look, just, like, at the linebacker room in general. I'm pretty excited for, you know, to see what they've got going on. You know, Servassier is going to be a beast back there.
Yeah, he's incredible.
I'm really excited to see how, Brandon George, I'm excited to see how he like develops. I remember back when I played, and he was just a recruit, and we were like working the camps and stuff. I just remember like seeing this kid, thinking like he's gonna be good. And Harley was like telling me, like, yeah, we're recruiting him. Like we want him bad. Like go over there and, you know, kind of talk to him and all that. So I'm excited to see what his development looks like. Yeah, I mean, I'm just excited for the linebacker room in general.
You played the star, right?
I played the star my first year, and then I kind of moved into money once I gained a little bit of weight. And Sean was playing the star, and then we kind of got to a point where we were able to just play sides of the field. So we kind of just either play money or star, depending on what side of the field we were on at the time, which I kind of liked better, just because you're able to stay on one side of the field. Definitely makes things easier when it comes to like subbing and just like knowing what the linemen on your side do. It kind of just makes things easier. So,
do you think one of those positions is harder than the other, star or money?
I think it just depends on what type of player you are. Like you're going to be more of a run fitter if you're a money. And so you're going to be more of a run fitter, and you're going to be covering tight ends a little bit more. If you're a star, you'll usually have to kind of play it more like a DB in ways, because you'll be on, you know, like the smaller guys, slot guys, and then you also have to, any runs that come out your way, they'll usually be in space, so you have to be a better open field tackler. So it kind of just depends on what your skill set is. Once I started to get pretty heavy, money was probably more of a natural fit for me, just because chasing those little guys out there is not easy.
Yeah, I watched the 2017 Miami game. You were still able to clean up Braxton Berrios a couple times.
Oh, yeah. I definitely...
NFL All-Pro Braxton Berrios.
yeah. It was funny, on the one, that one play where... I deflected it. I think it was, it's not the big deflection, the one where I was in the wrong coverage that I told you about. It was the one specifically on Braxton Berrios. We were in a coverage where it's, I forget what the name of the coverage was, but you're essentially letting the receiver pass you, and then you're trailing him on his inside hip the whole way, and then you're hoping that they try and throw it over, and then the safety will pick it. They were like in a they were in trips, and then the two guys on the inside were like bunched, and me and Dennis Briggs were like kind of on them. And the way you're supposed to do it is you're like kind of like supposed to switch if they like come inside, or like switch real fast. And me and Dennis, like, I don't know what was going on. We're like, dude, we were like kind of looking at each other like, all right, like, I'll take him, you take him, it'll be fine. And then they like switched right off the bat, and then we were both just like, so then Braxton like started running out towards Dennis, and I just like chased him anyway. So then Dennis like kind of like ran behind me, and the play like doesn't look very like mechanically right, but we ended up, you know, getting the deflection or whatever. But it was just funny on film, because you could like kind of see us like looking back at each other, and then they like switch. We're like, oh,
well, you know, if we have linebackers who have the performances that you had against Miami that day, I think
we're talking about the performance on the field or the performance that Peters had after the game.
Well, if they have the performance that Elijah had on the field, there will be a lot of performances being done.
Okay, like, just wanted to clarify, because they were both pretty impressive.
Yeah,
a lot of bar tabs being paid for pit linebackers.
Yeah, you said, you know, in camp you have good days and bad days. You know, that Miami day, that Friday after Thanksgiving was a good day for you, you know, in many facets of your life.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely was like a highlight of my career.
More tackles or Panther bombs done that day?
Panther bombs.
But yeah, like, yeah. 12 tackles.
Yeah, it was definitely Panther bombs by mercy rule, probably.
Well, I know we have some. Fan mail coming up. We want to go over some of those camp questions with you, Elijah. So we'll get to a break right here, and then we'll get to that fan mail. So now we're gonna hop into the fan mailbag. Thank you for everyone who submitted questions. If you submitted questions and we don't get to them this episode, don't worry. We're gonna keep some in the vault.
Yeah, or like be better at reading a prompt.
Right.
Yeah.
So, get right into it. First question we got. What do you guys think the depth chart for the running back room will be for this year? Oh, boy. And how much of Vincent Davis do you think we'll see this year? Because as of recent, I've seen no one talking about Davis, but talking about all three other running backs. Izzy Abana, Candace Stan account from Matthew Scavalloni.
I mean, it's Izzy. Have you seen the guy run the ball? He's the one.
I was thinking the same thing. Tooth to talk.
I imagine, you know, they're going into... There's obviously going to be a camp battle. There's four guys with ample experience on a team that is going to run the ball a hell of a lot this year. So I think they are going to see how some things shake out. But when you look at anything on paper, I just don't see how Izzy can't win it unless Rodney Hammond shows up sporting the number 6 this year and is just... you know, lights out. But even then, I think they'll each get their fair share.
We've talked about it amongst ourselves. There will be a battle for 2, 3, 4. I'm sure they'll all have their different situations they'll go in, but I think even Narduzzi has said that he favors Izzy lately. And you got to think Cignetti probably just walks in and is like, why is number 2 not getting the ball 20 times a game? Like, what was problem last year.
Yeah, I mean, he probably had, like, a printed out sheet of, like, the stat line from last year and was just, like, looking up at those four guys in the breakout and were like, what? Yeah, you guys all saw, like, the same number of snaps last year. But this guy looks like Superman if Superman was somehow faster and stronger.
Yeah, I think obviously Izzy's going to be the go-to guy, but I've invested a lot of stock in Rodney Hammond. I hold a lot of Rodney Hammond stock.
To the moon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm holding it to the moon. This is more of a bold prediction. This is not what I think will happen, but a bold prediction of mine. I think there's going to be a point this season where Rodney Hammond is the number one back, whether that because Izzy has to miss some time. He had two concussions last year.
Mm-hmm.
Elephant in the room. No one wants to talk about. I don't know how serious, but concussions are never good. I think Rodney Hammond, there's going to be some games this year. And we saw last year, Izzy's the physical freak, physical specimen, but Rodney Hammond is just such a natural running back. And I think he'll have a couple of 100-yard games this year.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking he should be the number two. I think that would be his spot to lose, frankly.
So what do we think about the role of the other two guys in the room, Daniel Carter and podcast favorite Vincent Davis?
I can't see Vincent Davis just completely disappearing.
No.
Because he has played such a vital role, you know, the last 3 years.
I would think that, like, he would be more of a... They would use him more as, like, a utility, like, gadget guy. Like, I think he did some good things. Just some of the situations that they put him in just did not make sense when you have a guy like Izzy last year. And I think that's where a lot of the, you know, feelings that we have about him, you know, kind of come from. He just, like, was not used in the right situations.
And then on top of that, you have a guy like Dan Carter now who is available. He was a fullback last year, and whether he's used as a fullback, I don't know what Cignetti feels about a fullback, but he'll be on the field more.
What I kind of figured was they'd put Dan Carter in that H-back role that Gavin Bartholomew was in last year, and then have Gavin, our friend Bart, play like a more traditional, like, line of scrimmage tight end role. But I didn't want to let it pass, Laj. You very eloquently put it in ways I don't think that we could last year. We had a lot of anger and frustration at Vinny Davis, and I feel very sorry about that. I am deeply apologetic to Vinny and his family, because it wasn't him that we were upset at. It was the fact that an offensive coordinator was like, this is our goal line back.
Yeah, so kind of owe him an apology after watching the Clemson condensed game the other day. I looked at his stat line after because I was like, did he kind of put together a nice stat line? Stat line, very underwhelming, but he made multiple big plays, made guys miss to get a first down when it was a third and two, or catches the ball out of the backfield on third and five, makes a guy miss, gets the first down. He made a lot of big plays like that in the Clemson game. And it just comes back to what I think we all believe is that he has a role in the offense, just maybe not so pronounced.
I just don't think Whipple gave a shit about the run game, and that's what it comes down to. Now there'll be a little bit more structure and, like, rhyme or reason to that. So
I could agree with that.
Yeah.
So not just each running back gets a drive.
It's like, we're going to throw it, so who cares who's out there? Then you're like, oh, well, third and two, he's out there. Run the ball.
Well, so one name that we haven't spoken about yet that, you know, I'd be interested to hear your guys' thoughts if he sees the field in any meaningful capacity. Sebo Flemister, our transfer running back from Notre Dame. I mean, he's got pedigree, obviously. You heard the two words I said before, transfer. Do we think that, you know, he has a shot at, you know, sneaking his way on?
I mean, I definitely think he was just a depth add. You know, running backs can get banged up, and you'd like to have a few that you can trot out there. I have no idea what to expect, if we expect him to play or not. I part of me feels like a guy wouldn't want to use his last year of eligibility to be a fifth string running back, but at the same time, maybe he was just like, you know what, I'll do it another year of school at another good academic institution.
Might as well get an ACC championship ring your last year of college.
Yeah, exactly. I don't anticipate him to play a lot, but you never know. A couple guys get banged up, we need an extra body out there, he gets hot. Could, but no, I'm not expecting him to play too much.
Fair.
Okay, on to our next question. Who are you guys most intrigued to hear more about this camp? This is from Brock Madinick. He gave us a couple guys that he's intrigued for on offense and defense. On offense, he said Jalen Barden, Bub Means, Carter Johnson. On defense, he mentioned MJ Devonshire, Solomon DeShield, and Shane Simon. So, yeah, spit out a couple names you guys are interested to hear about, maybe intrigued to see how much they're going to play this year.
I'll say Bub Means. I think at this point, we're all pretty well aware that Monfield might just be that dude. Like, him and Jared Wayne might just be really good 1-2 punch in the ACC. Bub Means might be a really good number three guy. Maybe he'll be even better than one of the other two, but he's the wild card there, just how good he is. So,
yeah, deep threat.
Yeah.
Blazing speed.
Yeah, I saw something about how, like how infinitesimal a percentage of his targets last year were shorter than 20 yards in the air.
Yeah. I think whenever Mumfield first got here, we're like, wow, this guy might be good. But after seeing a few clips from practice, everyone's like, yep, all first team all ACC, right in stone. And we're probably right, because just look at the guy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd say I'm definitely excited for the entire receiver room as a whole, but obviously we know, like, we have a pretty good idea what we're going to get from Jared Wayne and Mumfield and even this other guy. So I think another, I already said earlier, was Brandon George, defense. I'm excited to see a lot from him. Just
that's
based
your
on
boy.
Yeah, he's kind of my boy. Yeah. I mean, just based on what I said earlier, you know, he has all the measurables, and he's just like, if you ever met him, he just looks like a bad guy, you know. Like,
there were literally half a dozen linebackers that got solid playing time last year that are no longer here, either because they transferred or graduated. So we've got a little glimpses of the new guys. That's a good pick. Someone's got to step up.
I'm excited for Bengali Kamara. We got to talk to him a little bit this weekend. Very impressive kid. He's all business. And obviously, he was most improved player in spring camp. High praise from everyone around the program. You know, just a fresh face on that defense. He's going to be playing a very important role on the defense, bringing back just about everyone except for those outside linebackers. So him and Solomon DeShields are going to have to step up and fill, you know, the gap left by Cam Bright and Phil Campbell. So I'm really excited to see him play. So, yeah, he's looking to have a big year. We asked him, what draft year are you, 2025? And he said, man, I'm trying to be sooner than that. So who knows, big year on the field. Bando might be getting his name called in a year or two. So that's who I'm looking forward to see the most.
I'm going to flip to the other side of the linebacking core, because we've heard a ton about Kamara, you know, in spring, and he's really gotten hyped up, which is awesome when you're replacing almost an entire unit. I feel like I know nothing about Solomon DeShields, and yet I feel like there is less...
Former wide receiver.
I feel like there's less depth. Wow. That's you.
Following your footsteps.
Yeah.
Wow. Solomon DeShields.
So they can run.
but yeah, I feel like we've heard so much less about him, and there's less depth, you know, on the side of the field he's going to be playing, because I believe Shane Simon and Bengali Kamara will be splitting a little bit of time. But DeShields seems like he's out there all on his own in terms of depth, and I don't know a single thing about him. So obviously he is a freak in terms of size and athleticism, but, you know, how is that going to translate into our defense?
It's a good place to start.
Yeah. It would be a lot worse if he was like 5'10", you know, 195, but we have, you know, another 6'3", 225 freak.
Kamara actually said that in the spring in one of the Q&A press conference sessions, that he said he thought the athletics were... or the linebackers were going to be a lot more athletic this year than they were last year. What that means exactly, how that plays out on the field, I don't know. But he did say he thinks they're faster than the guys who were out there last year.
Well, I mean, that's definitely the way the game is evolving. That's definitely something you need, just with, you know, RPOs and all that type of stuff. You saw a lot with just different teams in the ACC that having that speed at the linebacker position, it's going to be very pivotal, I'd say.
Well, what about the defensive line? Obviously, returning a significant number of talent in production from last year, but we also have some really young guys coming up, both freshmen, sophomores, redshirt sophomores. Is there anyone you guys see potentially cracking that rotation, or at least want to hear about out of camp, staying true to what Brock asked us?
It's kind of funny that I'm saying this guy because he might not even be on the two deep. Nekai Johnson, I think we all know Deion Hayes, friend of the pod, will be like an emerging star in the ACC this year. He came on a lot in the later half of the season, but we kind of expect that. And the guys ahead of him, or the guys who are going to be playing alongside of him, they're solidified dudes. I think this might be the year that Nekai Johnson actually gets meaningful snaps that aren't in garbage time or against FCS teams. So I want to see him work himself in there and heat of the moment, big game, see if he can make some plays.
I think Nekai, I think because of the depth and how much talent and experience there is at defensive end, it might be a little tougher for Nekai than the other guy in his class, and that's Elliot Donald. I think everyone wants to see Elliot Donald on the field, the history with Aaron Donald, and obviously the pedigree he had coming in. He was a four-star guy, so I would love to see, can he be a guy who cracks that rotation? You know, Kalijah Kansey's locking down one spot, and then Devin Danielson, Tyler Bentley, David Green have been holding down that other DT spot and, like, rotating in there for what feels like 4 years at this point. Can one of those guys, like Elliot Donald or even a Dorian Ford, kind of crack the lineup and start to get some snaps there? I'll be interested to see if any of those younger guys push through.
Dill, I've actually been thinking about that non-Kalijah Kansey defensive tackle spot a lot recently. I mean, we have Danielson, Bentley, and Green, who are guys who've kind of been holding it down for a couple years. Having said that, they're all consistent and good, but have not been, you know,
Game breakers,
you know, world burners. So I'd be interested to hear about, you know, and that kind of sets the floor for the Pitt defensive line. It's a high floor for the Pitt defensive line, but what I want to hear is, you know, we have a kid coming in this year, or someone who really showed up and surprised us, and they are also going to be a difference maker, and a combination of Kalijah Kansey and another defensive tackle that comes out of the woodwork and is able to be a game breaker, that'd be unbelievable. You know, and you talked about Ford, you talked about Donald. I've actually been hearing really good things about Sean Fitzsimmons, who might play a little bit of defensive tackle. He's a freshman, he's a whippy old kid, and apparently he's really impressed a lot of people close to the program. So yeah, if we can get someone that can, you know,
if he can crack the lineup as a true freshman and crack this defensive line lineup,
this specific lineup,
then
yeah,
then he's the real deal.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine a front four of Haba, Hayes, Kansey, and then some fourth freak who breaks into the normal rotation and has an unbelievable year?
Deslin Alexander's still there. John Morgan's still there. Like, you trot the first four guys off and you just gotta go block these four.
It's an embarrassment of riches is what it is. Like,
who do you double team?
All of them. John Morgan is so big, by the way. Like, you have expectations of how big Division I athletes are. John Morgan's arms are roughly the thickness of, like, both of my thighs together. Like,
my torso.
Legitimately might be the size. Like, he is such a big dude.
Maybe it's why it's hard to block.
It's probably got something to do with it.
I can imagine.
Probably helps.
Yeah.
All right. We got one more mailbag question. Want to let Elijah get out of here. He's got a big day tomorrow. MGK concert?
Oh, yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Are you going to cry when he plays Drunk Face?
I will be crowd surfing when he plays Drunk Face.
All right, so the last question we got here. The past few seasons, it seems to take the Pitt defense a while to get things corrected / running smoothly. Due to the heavy senior and veteran presence, do you think the defense starts strong this year? I think Hallett and Hill getting a ton of experience will help, but the youth of the linebackers might really hurt them, especially against WVCC. I'm guessing that's a dig, West Virginia Community College, and Tennessee. Thoughts? That was from Put Pitt In. Thank you for that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the youth of the linebacking corps is definitely not a great situation, especially with those big games that we have right at the beginning. you're definitely going to be looking to the D line and the veterans in the back to kind of lead in the first couple of games. Linebackers, we really have to like try and, you know, be the quarterbacks of the defense. We're responsible for getting everyone set, and so you just hope that the guys who are in those spots now have been paying attention, you know, all through spring, will be paying attention all through camp, you know, learning what everyone on the field does so that you can get everyone set correctly so that everyone can do what they're supposed to do. And so definitely be like a bit of like an issue I could probably see in the first couple of games, especially against those opponents, like I said, but I don't see it being too big of a problem.
Is that why the Pitt defense takes a slower time to like be a well-oiled machine? As like we see later in the year, they get it together. Is it a player thing? Is it a coaching thing? Is it an adjustment thing? Like you said, the signal callers gotta know what they're doing. Is that what's the biggest part of that? Why does it take a while to get going?
Yeah, it's pretty much the whole defense works together in a sense, because we have to get pressure. Because we pretty much are playing, you know, leaving the corners and those guys in the back on islands, you know, expecting the ball to get out fast. And so in the beginning, it's kind of, you know, while guys are still trying to figure out playing with each other, it definitely is a little bit slower, which, you know, kind of leads to big plays a lot of times. And that's what you see in the beginning of the season. But as guys, like, start to play together and start to understand not only their role in the defense, but what the defense is doing together, that's when you like really start to see it come together.
So how much does having one mega veteran on that linebacking crew help? You know, since we aren't completely restarting fresh, we have Servasio Dennis, who's second team all ACC. How much can he as one individual help bridge the gap for the other two?
He's going to be like big. He's going to be instrumental in doing that. And you know, the dude seems like a very cerebral kid. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that he will be able to get it done. He's just got to be vocal. He's got to make sure he's communicating. He's got to, you know, kind of really take on a leadership role and make sure that everyone's on their shit. And you know, I don't think that the guys would miss a beat with him leading. So,
think about coaching. It's a good pep talk you had there.
No.
Okay. Moving on.
Well, I'm going to pretend you said yes, because that's actually a good transition to what I was going to ask. If you were Neil Brown or is it Josh Heupel?
Yes.
Yeah, those two dudes. How would you be attacking the relatively young and inexperienced Pitt linebacking core in those first two games and taking advantage of that position?
Do you want to have him answer this in case Neil Brown does some scouting by listening to our podcast? Or do you want to take that risk?
I just have this biting suspicion that nobody's listening to Loyal Sons for tips on how to take out Pitt.
They should.
Not to mention, no one gives a what I have to say. So.
All right, so what do you think?
I think definitely the hardest thing is like trying to figure out... when you come out into an ace set, so you the star is used to like playing out of the box, but the money more times than not is on the back side of the formation, so they'll usually still be in the box. So those ace sets where you have to have both outside linebackers playing outside in and basically trying to tackle in space and fill, because there's usually a gap in between the 3-tech and the 9-tech, and the money would usually be the one who's filling that hole, and they're usually right behind it. So when you're like in an A set or you have the money split out, he has to try and fill that hole from outside the box, and that's like a kind of hard thing to do. So there are a lot of, like, even when I played, there are a lot of teams who would like mess around with the formation, have motions like to get to that set, so that we would line up like correct at first and they'd motion the guy out, and then, you know, it just like messes up the run fits. So if I was a coach, that's how I would, you know, kind of attack us, like play with the formations to try and mess up the run fits, because it'll definitely get confusing for young linebackers.
Yeah, it's confusing for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was confusing for me when I
a guy who's played football for 20 years.
Yeah, like there were plenty of times, like during camp, my second year, where I was like, still like didn't know what the f- I was doing. Like, what the
hell? I'm sure Nardozzi loved that. Yeah.
So that's mostly through the run game. Is there, you know, we saw the team kind of get abused by RPO at the beginning of the season. Is there anything to that extent outside of the run game that these teams could be doing to take advantage of a young linebacking core?
RPOs are like, they're really hard. I think the biggest thing with those is you just really have to get into film. Like, watch what the linemen do. You really have to like just study the linemen and their mannerisms on runs versus passes versus RPOs, and that's I think the best thing that you can do for that. We never really had one specific rule for how we would play. It would kind of change week to week based on the team and based on like what they used like to do. So I couldn't really give advice specifically based on that. But I would say the biggest thing is just really trying to like hone in on the lineman, the specific lineman's like tendencies and mannerisms and stuff.
I'm just still thinking of you saying you didn't know what the f*** you were doing. I'm just picturing like Narduzzi, Elijah, what the f*** are you doing? Yeah.
And you're just like,
I don't know.
That's your gap. You literally like be like, that's your gap. And I'm like filling some other random gap or something. And I just be like, oh, I guess that makes sense.
That's why.
Like, you're literally standing right f***ing in it. Be like, yeah, all right.
If only you had the other team's play sheet tucked into your practice pants.
Yeah. I'd tell you, that was like one of the funniest things I ever saw that on film.
Well, hopefully Kamara and DeShields do a little bit better of a job than you did.
Hopefully not what the f*** they're doing.
I can't imagine it'd be that hard, honestly.
Well, that's all we got for the mailbag. But we can't just let you off that easy. We want a couple predictions for this year. First, who you got starting at quarterback?
I liked what I saw at a Keaton in the spring game. He obviously didn't complete too many, but the ones that were incomplete, he was literally hitting guys right in the hands.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of problems for him. I think he's accurate. But if it's Nick Patty, I won't be disappointed at all, because he's a dog.
He's a dog.
Yeah.
All right, score prediction, Pitt, West Virginia, backyard brawl.
I can see us cleaning up like a 35-17, something like that.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
I like, that's just the first number to pop in my head. I could be like 45-17, wow. 55-17.
You could.
Yeah. But West Virginia, they're scoring 2 touchdowns and a field goal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. Late fourth quarter, yeah.
No. Some garbage time.
All right. And then 2022, Pitt Panthers. We'll go regular season record. You don't have to go, unless you want to go all the way with it. But what's the, how many games the Panthers win in this year?
At least 10. Like without even a thought.
At least 4. 10. Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. At least 10. Like, I could see us cleaning up 11 and what was it, 3 last year?
Yeah.
I could see us cleaning that up again. You can see us clean up.
That's it?
Yeah, I mean, right. Come on. Like, obviously you want to shoot for the stars, but just saying, like, that's the floor.
The floor is 11-3.
You heard it here first, folks.
Awesome.
Yeah. I am disappointed that we're probably going to end up in Atlanta again, though.
Weren't a fan of Atlanta?
No. Not at all.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were fans of Atlanta.
Yeah. It just wasn't really didn't really seem like there was a bowl game going on there. You know what I mean? So, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, the bars close at like 11.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, that place sucked.
Heard it here first. Pitt's gone 11-3. Atlanta sucks. But, all right. Appreciate it, Elijah. Appreciate your time. I'm sure we'll see you soon before the backyard brawl. Maybe not on the show, but we'll see you around.
Yeah.
You'll be up Sloppy Joe's.
I'm sure you'll see me this week.
So, but once again, we appreciate it. As always, hail to Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Hail to Pitt.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it. Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Loyal Sun Show. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating, subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcasts, follow us on Twitter at The Loyal Suns. Subscribe to Pittsburgh Sports Live on YouTube. That's our partner, Pittsburgh Sports Now's YouTube channel. You don't want to miss any of the video content we've got coming out. And if you subscribe, that way you'll never miss it. Make sure to tune in to future episodes as we work through this camp season. We'll be talking to players, former players, people associated with the program, and a whole bunch of people who love Pitt as we count down the days to the backyard brawl on September 1st. As always, hail Loyal Sons of Pittsburgh.